It's Wednesday, time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Denise Ross, web editor and reporter with the Metro Daily Republic. She's based in Rapid City. And Denise, thanks for joining the program today.
It's good to be here, Carl.
Also with us on the line is Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. And Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Well, a call, as you've heard on the news, a California arbitrator cleared the South Dakota Board of Regents and the state in a breach of contract case involving the federal EB-5 immigrant visa program. This is the so-called Darley case. And Denise, you've written a little bit about this. What is this about?
Well, this, you know, when I interviewed Mike Brown yesterday, and his take was that this vindicates the entire EB-5 program. And it's important to understand that this case was not about the merits of EB-5 one way or the other. I think there's legitimate positions on it to support EB-5 and to question it. But what this particular case did was there was a company out of California that claimed it had been given rights to market South Dakota's EB-5 projects, which would be private business enterprises and startup projects, over in China. And they signed a contract, and after a couple of months, then the people at, you know, Yote Bolin and some of his partners decided they didn't want to participate with this company anymore and tried to cancel the contract. And so the company sued, trying to say they had breached the contract. And so all that happened yesterday in the ruling was this arbitrator, who was a retired California judge, said, no, South Dakota is not liable to pay this California company any money. And at the same time, you know, the state had filed some counterclaims, and the judge said, that those, you know, he didn't support those either, so the California company is not liable, so everybody walks away and they all get to pay their lawyers, essentially. And so that's what happened. As far as the EB-5 program itself and how it was administered in South Dakota, and there's a lot of other questions about what went on up there in Northern State and how that was handled, those questions are still active, and I think the EB-5 program itself is still a debatable issue. I think if you're a governor who's trying to grow the economy of the state and create jobs, it's certainly an attractive tool for economic development. But if you're looking at how this allows rich foreigners to cut in front of the line and get their green cards, I think that raises some legitimate questions as well. And that this case didn't address any of those issues.
And Denise, you also wrote in a story for the Metro Daily Republic that Mike Round's brother oversaw the EB-5 litigation. What was Dennis Round's connection to this?
His job, his title, he was head of the Office of Risk Management, and he also had the title of Director of Litigation and Legal Services for the Governor, which means officially, and he oversees all the lawsuits for the state, and so this was one of many, many, I think, to be fair, to Dennis Rounds. And when I interviewed him, I believe him. He was so sincere and earnest when he said he didn't remember this, didn't ring a bell, challenged me on several of the facts. And this Yote Bolin guy, who is not a lawyer but was a state employee, went into California, or into federal court, excuse me, and filed a brief and tried to represent, or did represent, the state, even though he was not authorized to do so. And he was incredulous when I explained that to him. He was saying, no, that's not how it works, and that couldn't happen. And I said, well, no, in fact, it did happen, and there's documents online you can go look at. So even though he was in charge of overseeing the litigation, which that was his job, in the interview I had with him, it was pretty apparent to me that he wasn't intimately aware with the details of this particular case, which raises another set of questions about how unusual this case is. There were five state lawyers dealing with this case. How come they didn't raise some more red flags? That's a question that I just have as a South Dakota resident, you know, and taxpayer, that this wasn't brought to more higher-up attention, I guess.
Well, Roger Whittle, talking about this, in particular, I guess the Darley case, as Denise said, Mike Round says the dismissal of that vindicates him. Does it?
That's been the Republicans' line so far, that it's a complete victory for them. But Denise said it's really not. This case was just a small part of the entire EB-5 program. In fact, a lot of stuff came out of the arbiters' report that really casts even more questions on how this program was run. Apparently, Bolin, when he was spinning off his own company that he later transferred all EB-5 responsibilities to, had filed with the federal government that this program was, that the company was not going to be run by him, and when in fact it was. So there's still a lot of questions unanswered in this.
Well, with all these unanswered questions, Roger, is this something that the Democrats can continue to use over the next few weeks of this campaign?
Oh, I'm sure they will. They've been hammering it pretty hard lately, and this should do nothing to alter their course.
Is there any danger for the Democrats in using this issue too much, Roger?
I don't see how there could be. I think people are finally getting to be more interested. I mean, people in general in the state are. We learn a little bit more about this every day, every week. And when this first came out, I don't think a lot of people were paying much attention to it, but it's just been constantly in the news for so long. I think people are slowly learning a little bit about it and becoming more interested in. So I definitely think you'll see the Democrats keeping beating the drum on this.
Denise, do you think that people are, like Roger said, voters, the general public, as this news keeps being covered, becoming more interested in that this will be an important issue or is an important issue as they go to the polls?
I think it is. You know, the stories that I've filed on the Mitchell Papers website, MitchellRepublic.com, they're trending at the top of the list. So that tells me that there is interest in what's happening. And it's funny, when you're writing these stories, you try to keep it, the language as plain and as simple as possible. So for early on when I was writing these stories, you know, I'd try to keep the name Yoak Bolin out of the story because most people don't know who he is. Well, that was difficult to do, and now all of a sudden you can put his name in the headline because everybody knows who the guy is, and his pictures are on the TV and those ads, and he's very well known now, even though we haven't heard a word from him about all of this. The same thing with the EB-5 tag. Early on, I was trying to not use EB-5. Well, now you can put that in a headline, and it's one of the top search terms related to this online. So people are starting to engage and starting to understand that this is complicated. I mean, the stack of documents that I've gotten from various sources, a lot of them from the Democratic Party, are so voluminous, I haven't been able to even read through all of them. There's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. Just from this Darley case alone, there's a lot of documents. And then you go on to all the other documents that are related to this, and it's overwhelming. And so our job in the media is to try and break it down into bite-sized pieces that people can understand. And the question is, where do you start, you know, when you're trying to tell this story? It is so complicated what happened. But I think we're starting to understand, at least I have, you know, that the state employee made a very questionable move in trying to transfer this operation into a for-profit enterprise. And I think that's still a big question about how that was allowed to happen, why that was allowed to happen, and why, when it came to light, apparently there wasn't anything done about it. I mean, there's nothing that we know of at this point.
Well, Roger Whittle, it sounds like, given the complexities of this, no matter what happens during this election, that this is an issue that will continue for a while yet?
Oh, I would agree. And I think the fact that people are pronouncing Mr. Bolin's name properly now, his first name, tells you just how much people are paying attention. You haven't heard Jupe for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, moving on from EB-5, but staying with the Senate race, yesterday the nationwide May Day Super PAC announced that it plans to spend at least $1 million to support Democrat Rick Wyland's Senate campaign. Given that Rick Wyland has based so much of his campaign theme on getting big money out of politics, Denise, do you think this kind of muddies the issues that he's raising, that the whole aspect of big money?
Well, undoubtedly he's walking a fine line here. His answer has been that he called on Mike Rounds early in the campaign to vow to keep big money out, and Rounds did not take him up on that offer. And Wyland's stock answer has been, I'm not going to unilaterally disarm. If this is the game that we're going to play, then I'm going to play by the rules. But you know, he had made that an issue early on. I don't know how much that might resonate with voters. You know, I think that Larry Prester might be the more effective messenger on that, since he's getting the big money and he's really taking the bipartisan message out there. And you can see that his poll numbers, there was just that poll that came out yesterday from the Aberdeen paper and KSFY that shows that he's gaining further in the polls, according to that one. So who that all helps, I don't know, but yeah, it is a tough one for Rick Wyland. But I guess given all the everything else that's going on, maybe he's willing to take that challenge on and and get the money.
And Roger, what do we know about this May Day Super PAC?
Well, it's new, and they're actually a Super PAC. They're tagging themselves as the Super PAC to end all Super PACs, which is their goal is to elect people to Congress who want to see campaign finance reform. And they are embracing the irony of this, that they're a big money Super PAC trying to end big money in politics. And I think Rick Weiland's going to have to take that same embracing the irony step, because this is a step toward a goal of eliminating big money in politics. And if you have to use it for a while, you're going to have to use it. But they're not going full bore this year. They said they're going to have a few candidates they're going to back this election cycle, and then see how everything goes, and then in 2016 really make a strong push to get every candidate who backs campaign reform into office.
Well, Roger, do you think the Super PAC's $1 million at least will have a major impact on the Senate race during these last few weeks?
I would think so. $1 million buys a lot of political advertising in South Dakota. And Rick, if you're listening, you know our number.
and Denise Ross, do you think it'll be, you agree with Roger, it'll be a big impact?
I think it will, especially given how we've seen this race tighten over the months that it's gone on. And it's heating up, as you know, we just talked about at the top of the discussion. There's people are starting to engage, ask questions. And so I think, you know, anytime you get this much money in a race, it makes a difference. But when it's close, that makes all that much more difference.
Well, in talking about these polls, Denise, you mentioned the American Aberdeen American News, KSFY, KOTA poll that has Rounds at 35, Pressler at 32, Rick Weiland at 28. Then there's the New York Times, CBS, YouGov poll has Rounds at 38%, Rick Weiland at 23, Larry Pressler 12 with undecided at 17. Roger, can we gather anything from these two polls?
I thought these were very interesting polls. Looking at it overall, I would say two things pop out, that Mike Rounds is a former Republican governor in a heavily Republican state, only getting basically a little over a third of the respondents, is a problem, I think. And then you look at the numbers. One poll has Larry Pressler 12%, one of them has him at 32%. So, you know, I look at those numbers and say, can we really trust them?
Do Denise, you know, looking at these polls, tend to suggest that Larry Pressler is the one that is gaining more traction? Are we going to, or maybe already seeing that Rounds or Rick Weiland have been targeting Pressler?
You know, if they have been, it has escaped my attention, and I think if he gets that close, I suppose you will see some of that come out. The Republican folks that I talk to who are not directly affiliated with the Rounds campaign are still comfortable. They feel like Rounds is still in a position to win this race, that he's not in danger, but they also say that it would be a miracle for him to break 40% and that there's no room for error. So in that, I think the more nervous you get and the more under siege you get, I suppose you could make decisions where you would start going after the people who are gaining on you.
And Roger Whittle, do you see that this having an impact on what Rounds and Weiland do vis-a-vis Larry Pressler over the next few weeks?
Well, from where Pressler started to where he is now, it certainly opened a lot of eyes. And I think any good campaign manager would see that, too, and start to do something about it. It'll be interesting to see what they do, though.
Well, finally, coming up tomorrow, SDPB-TV is hosting a debate with the three gubernatorial candidates, Republican incumbent Dennis Dugard, Democrat Susan Wismer, and Independent Mike Myers. At this stage of the race, Denise, what do you expect to hear from the candidates tomorrow?
Well, I think you're going to probably hear Susan Wismer try to raise the EB-5 questions and make them stick to Dennis Dugard, which the Democrats have tried to do as well. It just hasn't seemed to stick to him like it stuck to Mike Rounds, because he sort of inherited a lot of this, and he's been more effective, I guess, in distancing himself from it. But I think she's going to try and bring it back, because it is the hot issue right now. I think she's also going to, you know, make the cases that she made in the other debates where she talked about education spending and the cuts that were made during Dugard's first year and some of the other things that the budget priorities that she thinks South Dakota should be doing differently. I think you're going to just see Dennis Dugard try to get through the debate without making too, you know, without saying too much one way or the other, because he's got a pretty commanding lead as far as I understand. And then Mike Myers, he's kind of the wild card. We don't know what we'll see from him.
And Roger Whittle, what do you expect tomorrow?
Well, I think the smartest thing Dennis Dugard ever did was to cancel the EB-5 contract with Boland's company as soon as he took office. Susan's been bringing that up a lot, but I think the governor has effectively distanced himself from it. Nobody seems to be tying this with him, so I think she should focus on her education goals and things like that, because the EB-5 is not, from what I see, having much of an impact on the governor's race.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Roger, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Denise, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.